Today on Seculo, President Trump reacts to Iran's new supreme leader, saying he's not going to last long.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host.
Welcome to Seculo. I'm Will Haynes. I'll be joined momentarily by Jordan Seculo. And we have a packed show for you today. I want to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110 to join the conversation. And what we saw over the weekend was that the Iranian Council of Experts decided to move forward and pick their new supreme leader. The supreme leader is someone that was talked about. This was the son of the now deceased Ayatollah. And we know his name is Mojtaba Khamenei. He's 56 years old, the son of Ali Khamenei, and was very close to the IRGC. What does this tell us? It tells us that the Iranians are doubling down, that they are trying to show the world that they are not planning on going anywhere. Meanwhile, the U.S. stepped up the bombings in what we saw over the weekend, hitting places like oil refineries and making it a lot more painful on the Iranian regime as they try to hang on. We're going to break all this down, talk about what it means. But as the skies over Iran were lit up with the explosions at these oil refineries, both putting a strain on the economic viability of the regime as well as their own internal energy viability, you see that the hardliners within Iran are not showing any sign of backing down. Jordan is joining me remotely today. But Jordan, what we see from this is that the mullahs and those within Iran are trying to signal some sort of strength in the midst of what has been a very impressive U.S. and Israeli operation thus far.
I think what they're trying to put on display is that they have the Guardian Council of 88 and that they were able to get together, put a new leader in power who oversees and acts also as commander-in-chief of the Iranian armed forces, and then, of course, works with, as he has very closely, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps and some of these militias as well. So I think it's more of a show than it is an actual sign of strength. Remember, President Trump has still told the Iranian people to stay indoors. He hasn't yet said this is the moment to go outside and seize the government because of the amount of firepower the U.S. is unleashing on this radical, dangerous regime to the entire world, but especially to our ally Israel. And ultimately, their number one target is the United States of America, your children, your grandchildren. That's who they really want to annihilate. And so I think, Will, it was a show of stability. But when you look at the images coming out of Iran and how the lack of their ability to respond now, it does appear that we control the air. I think that tells everything.
Yes. And as Jordan said, and we will continue to talk about this, what does it mean even for the United States? What does it mean for us here at home? As we saw some incidents over the weekend that kind of raised some alarm here in the United States. But the president said to ABC News, this was in a written interview that we've seen thus far. They've not released this audio statement, but he told ABC News that the new leader is, quote, not going to last long if they aren't getting the approval of the president. We'll also contrast that with what happened in Venezuela, where you see the U.S. now working with leadership there post the capture of Nicolas Maduro. But folks, we are also launching something interesting this week that we really think is the perfect time to do this. And this is our 7 days of global impact, because here at the ACLJ, while our domestic work here in the United States is vitally important to your freedoms, we also work around the world. And we're going to show each day more ways that you may not hear about on the daily broadcast, that we are engaged around the world fighting for freedom, fighting for liberty, and for the ability to practice your faith. Go to aclj.org/global to double your impact today.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith.
The best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact. And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. For you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy, and across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's, it's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Welcome back to Seculo. I'm Will Haynes. I'm joined by Jordan Seculo, and we are talking about the move by the Iranians over the weekend where they chose a new supreme leader. This is Ayatollah Mojtaba Khamenei. It is the son of Ali Khamenei, the now dead Ayatollah and supreme leader of Iran. This is the first time in Iranian history since the revolution. This is now the third supreme leader, but only the first time that it has been passed down in the family. This individual, he's 56 years old. He is a hardline figure, much like his father. And it is a signal to the world from the Iranians that they are not backing down or going along with the president's calls for unconditional surrender. Now, what it also tells us, Jordan, is how closely this individual is tied to the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, which is really the unit and secondary military. There's two real militaries in Iran. There's the normal army, and then there is the IRGC. The IRGC is really tasked with protecting the Islamic Republic in ideology, as well as they have their hands in almost all of the economic affairs of the Islamic Republic. It's very powerful, very wealthy, but they also are the main exporter of terror. They are the ones that control the proxy groups, whether it be Hezbollah in Lebanon. You saw an IRGC commander that was taken out over the weekend in Beirut by the Israelis. You also have to think about the Houthis as well as Hamas and other subgroups, the militias that attack U.S. troops in Iraq. Those are also all controlled by the IRGC. In reality, this is not an unexpected move by a regime that is in the midst of conflict, that is trying to fight. But at the end of the day, not unexpected, but we also hear from the president, he doesn't expect this individual to last long because this isn't what the U.S. wants. I want to get your take on that as well as the connection of this new supreme leader to the IRGC. Do you think he is going to have supreme authority, or do we really know that the IRGC itself is the only thing running the country at this point?
I think the IRGC, this was their move to try and hold on to some kind of power. So yes, I think he's kind of Ayatollah in name only. They pick the son. They basically control him. As you said, the relationship there is so deep. He would not have become Ayatollah, but for the IRGC, he will not survive. And guess what? He might not survive anyways, but he will not survive at all in Iran without the backing of the IRGC. So They are the ones that will fight until the last man is standing, because their entire life, not just their military life, but their business, the reason why there's so many billionaires in the IRGC is because it's a terror business that exports that terror around the world for a price. They also run so much of Iran's industrial work and oil and covert operations with oil, trying to get that to China and other places that will still buy this illegal crude oil. So, Will, I think this is an attempt to hold on to power. But I don't think we can make a judgment call about what really happens next. Because until kind of the U.S. and Israel air campaign is over or becomes targeted enough for people in the streets to reemerge from their homes and to try and take their government, as President Trump has talked about, we won't know how successful all of this is. We know it's been a success from the air in disrupting the entire Islamic Republic of Iran. Will the people be in charge of Iran ultimately a month from now? We don't know. Will there be a civil war? We don't know. Will there be more covert actions? We don't know. But we are certainly on a path to putting the Iranian people in a position so that they can attempt to take power by taking out so much of, you heard the president say it, Will, the Iranian, I think it was Navy, Air Force, military, and IRGC that is on the ground in Iran operating. We have air control. We even told the UK, back off. We don't want your help anymore because we've got this under control.
Well, and as you mentioned, the air superiority is such an important thing. Many of the so-called experts that have been talking about if the U.S. were to engage Iran in this way, they would never be able to get air superiority. And that was part of the reason why all of these experts said that there would be such a huge cost on American lives if we were to engage Iran. None of them believed what we have done now was even possible. So I think that is also where the president does get, he and his leadership team, the Joint Chiefs, the Secretary of War, and the military commanders that have been given the ability to fight this operation, this war, in a way that previous military leaders were not allowed to, it appears, because of how quickly and strongly the U.S. was able to accomplish that aspect of it. I think that gives the president some more leeway as far as achieving the stated goals of no nuclear Iran and allowing for an opportunity of the people to take their country back. I want to hear from the audience as well. What do you think about that? Do you think the fact that there has been success thus far gives the president some more time on this? Call me at 1-800-684-3110. Or do you believe that things like we're seeing oil hitting $100 a barrel? Do you think things like that that could cause economic stresses back at home could force the hand of the administration to pivot in some way? I want to hear from you. But Jordan, even the what we saw over the weekend, we saw multiple flights in the U.S. diverted because of some ended up being miscommunications. But clearly, the American aviation security, the airlines are on high alert. We saw Kansas City, the entire airport and parking garage evacuated. People were evacuated to the tarmac for 2 hours because of bomb threats. This is at the same time that ABC News is reporting that the U.S. Intercepted an encrypted communication believed to have originated in Iran that may serve as an operational trigger for sleeper assets outside the country. That is a big concern here. We also saw what happened in New York over the weekend, where individuals that were protesting were attacked by counter-protesters that may have had ties to the Islamic State and were throwing incendiary devices in what could have been IEDs. Jordan, what are your thoughts on that as we look at the repercussions, something we've been concerned about, but it starts to seem that the government, as well as the companies that protect our skies and provide air travel, are also taking this very seriously right now.
Yeah, I mean, just by using certain words on a plane, you're going to be removed from the plane. The plane's going to be diverted. We know there are and have been Iranian sleeper cells inside the United States for decades. We know this was occurring under the Biden administration because the ACLJ uncovered it, that two came across the border between Mexico. And they actually put their pictures up for a bit, and then they took them down. You know, minutes later, we were able to fight and got those got that information back up. So we know that terrorists used our porous southern border under Democrats to get across. The question, and I think, Will, you posed it best, are we going to see some lone wolves, or are these actually cells operating? Is there an operator left in place inside Iran? But again, at this moment, I would tell people we have to remain vigilant. We are in a conflict with a country whose number one slogan is death to America. And I think President Trump, what he wants to leave to the American people is a different Iran, an Iran that's main slogan is not to kill all Americans and our allies and our military. They've got blood on their hands. They have the U.S. blood on their hands before. They have it now. And listen, anything we can do to free up the Iranian people inside the Islamic Republic to take back that government, I could imagine, Will, just a decade from now, an Iran that is a great partner with the United States of America. And think about how that would change the global political landscape if China and Russia have a U.S. ally in Iran instead of one of the few countries they have left to ally with right now in the Islamic Republic.
Well, and I think, Jordan, that's also why the president, when he says this Ayatollah will not last long, is such a real threat to someone like that, that is in that position, because we know that it cannot be that they replace the Ayatollah with the next supreme leader who still lives by the ideology death to America and death to Israel. And I think that we will find out how those operations take place in the very near future. That's got to be a lonely job, being the supreme leader of Iran right now, with how much of the leadership has already been taken out. But also a very frightening job, knowing that you are the biggest target of the might of the American military and the Israeli military. We'll get into more of this in the next segment. We'll be joined by Jeff Balaban, and we're also going to talk more about this 7 days of global impact that we are talking about this week at the ACLJ. You may be aware of this broadcast or the work we do domestically, but how much of an impact when you support the ACLJ that you make on the world itself? Go to aclj.org/global to support us today.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy. And across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's. It's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith,
the best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact, and it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact, to defend freedom for you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
Welcome back to Seculo. We're being joined by our senior counsel as well as the director of ACLJ Jerusalem, Jeff Balaban. But really, why I wanted to talk with Jeff today is because of the work that we do internationally. And I thought he would be a great person to join me today to kick off this 7 days of Global Impact Week that we are showcasing here at the ACLJ, because we do. We talk about a lot of domestic issues and policy here on this broadcast. We talk about the work that we do even for children that are persecuted at their schools, that are having their rights violated, pastors that are having their rights violated, churches that are being attacked by Gavin Newsom trying to take the tithes and offerings away and put it in state coffers. But that isn't all we do. We also have such a robust international operation here at the ACLJ that you support when you support the ACLJ. And right now, that support is doubled. Your impact is doubled, not just here at home, but around the world. And so, Jeff, I wanted to talk to you because it ties in with everything that's going on in the news, with this conflict with Iran. You were supposed to be headed back to Israel yesterday, but for obvious reasons, flights are not all just wide open heading back to Israel. But your work doesn't stop. You're at a conference today talking about law and anti-Semitism, and so that work pivots sometimes because of the nature of what you do as director of ACLJ Jerusalem. So even just to tell people how their support of ACLJ has a global impact when it comes to fighting anti-Semitism, standing with Israel, and even the work we've done at the UN pushing back on the Iranian regime, it's all vital, and we can't do it without the support of those that give to ACLJ.
Sure. So I'm joining you from a conference center, so I'm using this. Hopefully you can hear me clearly.
Sound great.
Yeah, I was supposed to, okay, great. I was supposed to be flying to Israel yesterday. Flight was canceled. And instead, there was a conference taking place in New York on law and anti-Semitism. And the opportunity came to be here, but also to present, because we obviously are known to have expertise in this area. And so pivoted all day yesterday and all day today, met this conference. And this conference touches on so many of the things, William, that you just mentioned, that ACLJ is involved in at the highest levels, has expertise. First of all, there are Americans here, obviously, but it's also lawyers and law professors and jurists from around the world, also some students, to talk about what's going on campus. And the issues have to do with the instrumentalities of the law and how they can help, what the limitations are, how to do better, because anti-Semitism has become a reality in so many places. And so we're talking about both to protect ourselves and others, by the way, we're talking about Zionism as well. And we know most Zionists today are not Jews, because there aren't that many Jews in the world. Most Zionists today are actually Christians. And even association with supporting Israel can lead to harassment. So that's been part of the topic of conversation here. While I'm here, I met actually a professor who was an ACLJ client who we thank God were very successful. He said he wasn't happy with the lawyers he had before, and we took over the case, it was very successful for him. The result of that conversation led to, we haven't yet seen it. I mean, I've seen it, haven't yet shared it internally. Other professors coming to me with cases of potential anti-Semitism litigation in terms of their own universities that's gone on. So there are potential cases that we'll be looking at. Well, there are cases we'll be looking at, may become potential ACLJ clients. But then there's the more broad situation here. I'm obviously here with expertise in terms of the limitations of the law and the uses of the law, but also in terms of what's happening on a geopolitical level and how this dialogue impacts the fate of Israel and Israelis, but also Jews around the world and those who support us.
And Jeff, as you mentioned, that's another way that we are involved. We fight for students, we fight for professors that are discriminated against at elite universities because they are Jewish, or in some cases they aren't Jewish, but they are just friendly to the Israeli people or to Jewish people. And that, especially when we've come out of this era of the Biden DEI initiatives throughout government and how that has gone through all levels of academia. The only people group that it was culturally and I would argue they thought legally acceptable to discriminate are people that are Jewish or support Jews. If you were in those two categories, then you had no hope when it came to the administration protecting you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, and we've been talking about this for a while now, now even on the ideological and political, what had been thought of as right, there's a schism there. And there's also an attack by people claiming to be American nationalists or Christians, you know, attacking Christians directly as being the worst people in the world for supporting the Jews, right? Jews are bad, but Christians who support us are even worse. This is a fight that's going on right now at the most important levels of our culture, of American culture. And we have to be present to push back against it because their goal is indistinguishable. In fact, they use the same phrases that the Islamist world and the progressive world use, which is that, you know, Judeo-Christian concepts are satanic, blasphemous, evil. It's a disaster culturally. And this is the moment right now, this upcoming election, you know, and the fact that we're involved on a policy level, the fact that we're so close to so many members of Congress and also to the administration becomes unbelievably important because this cultural fight is being fought out in politics right now. And, you know, there was a time not that long ago where Democrats were pro-Israel and talked to themselves as Zionists. Now it's almost impossible. Now you see Gavin Newsom wants to be a presidential candidate and he's using the worst kinds of blood libels about Israel. It's horrific stuff that would have been unimaginable 15 years ago. Well, unfortunately, it's happening around the country on the Republican side also, and there has to be pushback because America won't survive if both parties go woke.
And you know, there's a lot of talk as in some spaces, even on the conservative right, where they talk about the uni party, where you know both Republicans and Democrats are all bad; they're all going for the same goal. What we have seen emerge is a uni party of the most radical left and most radical right that are all of a sudden coming together. You call it the horseshoe, where they're fighting the same evil battle. And all of a sudden they discover these thousand-year-old tropes and get attracted to this type of rhetoric. And it's evil. And we fight against it. We've been fighting against it for decades and will continue to, Jeff.
Yeah, I've always believed that the horseshoe metaphor symbol was wrong because it is actually a circle that completes itself. And the far fringes really agree on the same thing, which is their hostility to Judeo-Christian American civilization, to the greatest civilization ever created by humanity, because it's built on biblical ideas. Well, we're seeing it being fought right now, real time, physically, spiritually, materially, and being here at this conference is one important part of what we do, but also representing cases of what we do and dealing with, you know, we have, now that I'm here in New York, we have delegations coming in that I wasn't going to be able to meet, but from other countries that I've met through my work at ACLJ Jerusalem, where we're here also to talk about these issues, and we're all gathering together at the end of this week. So the work continues because there's always work to be done everywhere.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today. Get back to your conference. But once again, folks, when you partner with the ACLJ, you make a global impact. You make a huge impact here at home, but all over the world. We've got a case I can't wait to tell you about tomorrow, a victory out of Pakistan that you're not going to believe. But we are in Pakistan. We are in Europe. We are in Africa. We are in Jerusalem. When you support the ACLJ, your impact is not just here in the United States. It is a global impact. Have your impact doubled at ACLJ.org.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact.
And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
keeping you informed and engaged. Now more than ever. This is Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo, second half hour of the broadcast, and I want to go ahead and get to some phone calls. But if you're just joining us, Iran has announced their new supreme leader. This is Mojtaba Khamenei, the son of Ali Khamenei, the now dead Ayatollah and supreme leader of Iran. And he is very much in the same vein of his father. He is very closely aligned with the IRGC. So the signal from Iran is one probably of desperation, but also of not backing down on their hardline stance that they have been carrying out. We know that we've seen the way that Venezuela was able to pivot and now work with the United States after Nicolas Maduro was taken out of power. I think maybe there were some offers of it to be something like that from the United States. If, hey, you're able to work with us, stop this death to America stuff, stop this nuclear program, maybe we'll be able to work together. The Iranians are not signaling that that is a thing that they're interested in. And I now believe that target number one is Mojtaba Khamenei, the new supreme leader of Iran. We are going to get to some phone calls, as President Trump, though, said that he's not going to last long because the U.S. does not approve of this move. But let's go to Denise calling from Ohio on line one. And if you want to be on air, call me at 1-800-684-3110. It's just me the rest of this half hour. So we're going to get into some of this. I'm going to take your calls and questions. And you can do that at 1-800-684-3110. But Denise, you're on Seculo. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment. America cannot stop bombing Iran.
I agree with you. I think at this point, and once again, you saw that Democrats in the Senate and House tried to get America to stop bombing Iran, stop this operation with their resolution that failed in both the House and Senate last week. But I think that the administration is clear-eyed about what their goals are, no matter what people like Adam Schiff and what minority leader of the Senate, Chuck Schumer, say that they don't know what they're doing or they're not planning this out well. But I want to play for you Byte 15. This was Secretary of War Pete Hegseth on with, I believe, Major Garrett. And this is what he had to say about what the goals of the U.S. administration are. Byte 15.
The president said recently there will be no deal with Iran except unconditional surrender. Mm-hmm. What does that look like, unconditional surrender? How will you know it's real?
It means we're fighting to win. It means we set the terms. We'll know when they're not capable of fighting. There'll be a point where they'll have no choice but to do that. Whether they know it or not, they will be combat ineffective. They will surrender.
Typically, the understanding of a surrender is person to person. Is that what would be required in a matter like this?
Well, there's a lot of different ways. Whether they want to admit it or not, whether their pride lets them say it out loud or not, it's President Trump who will set the terms of that.
Once again, you do see the media trying to pull a fast one. I mean, that question from Major Garrett of typically surrender is done person to person. You know, you sit down, maybe you have a meal, you say, you know what? We're going to sign this document. We surrender. We're done. It's such a disingenuous question about, like, can you even get to surrender? But I think also Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, showed very clearly that this regime is not acceptable and that any chance of them chanting death to America or death to Israel will not stand. So we'll see what unconditional surrender looks like. Give me a call at 1-800-684-3110 as I take more of your phone calls in this half hour. And if you're watching on YouTube or Rumble, go ahead and give a thumbs up to the broadcast and tell me where you're watching from. I'd love to see that. As Logan so often says, he loves to see that as well. So let me know where you're watching from. And if you want to support us during this Global Impact Week, go to aclj.org/global and have your impact doubled. That's aclj.org/global. We'll be right back.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith.
The best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact. And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. For you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy, and across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's, it's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Welcome back to Seculo, and I've got some phone lines open if you want to call and be on air, ask a question, give a comment, 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. One thing that is popped up over the weekend as well, kind of two concerns domestically, as we see the war continue on, these actions and airstrikes have grown in some cases, but the ability for Iran to strike back is diminishing. A lot of their attacks are now focused on those one-way drones, which I would imagine are in limited supply. At some point, they start running out of those. They did sell a lot of them to Russia to fight in Ukraine with. But kind of the two concerns at home that popped up over the weekend are the oil prices. As the weekend markets open, you saw the futures go up to over $100 a barrel. And this is a significant increase. It's not a record high, but many times when there is conflict in the Middle East, this is a natural reaction to instability in the region, as well as a lot of concern domestically about one-off terror attacks or people that are directed by the Iranian regime that are sleeper cells being activated. ABC News reports that an encrypted communication that they believe originated in Iran may serve as an operational trigger for sleeper assets. We saw many flights diverted and having to be grounded and have individuals taken off of planes because of concerns. We saw the airport in Kansas City, which was evacuated, both that and a parking garage, for multiple hours as they investigated bomb threats. We saw what took place outside of Gracie Mansion in New York City, where two individuals had incendiary devices, what looked like were homemade IEDs, glass jars with propellants inside, as well as shrapnel and hobby fuses that were out of the top of them, and they were hurled into a crowd. Fortunately, no one appeared to be injured, and those did not detonate. But still, the concern is there that the spillover from the conflict in Iran could happen here. We have seen one inspired attack in Austin, Texas, that happened just after these attacks began, where someone shot into in the evening at a restaurant or bar and killed people and then was taken out by the police there. So those are the concerns at home. And I'm curious about your take as well, as we see how effectively the military is executing this operation against the Iranian regime. What are your concerns at home? And to some degree, I believe no matter what the people on X want to tell you, I do believe that most Americans that support this president or that are understand the reality of what the Iranian regime is, are in support of the actions that we are taking. There's also the question of what comes next. When you talk about unconditional surrender, how is that achieved without some sort of ground force moving forward? We know that there were talks last week that the Kurds are preparing ground forces for a potential invasion into the Iranian capital in the cities where the strongholds of the IRGC exist. So I want to hear from you, 1-800-684-3110. And actually, I want to take Linda's call on line 4 from California, because that goes right into this, about what it would look like. How could a regime change actually take place? Linda, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. Yes, I had a question this morning. It occurred during your second segment about how the Iranian people would indeed foster a change of any kind, or to be, become a force that would have some leadership in making the change, because they're in their homes, they're unarmed, and without help from either the Israelis or with the American support, with some kind of force. Even if they came out, wouldn't they just mow them down? How realistically, what does that look like for them to be able to come up with some leadership, to bring someone forward that they could actually get behind, support, and I mean, without some ground support with arms, I don't know how that would realistically happen with any you know, hope of some change by right. coming from the Iranian people, even though they desire it.
And Linda, I think one, there are many ways that it could play out, but it's an excellent question, because you do see this and you're like, okay, well, we can continue to bomb sites and take out the Iranian operational capacity to send their ballistic missiles into the region or at U.S. assets. But how does that translate into a real change on the ground? And that is going to be the fight. That is going to be the fight that I think President Trump has clearly said he wants to be the people's fight. But it is not as though they would be all by themselves. One, there would be the air support, that because of the free reign that the U.S. and Israel have over the skies. But two, we've heard about the Kurds potentially mounting some sort of ground invasion. I do think that when we talk about boots on the ground, that is more a traditional infantry style invasion. I don't think that that would exclude U.S. Special Forces operations or Israeli Special Forces operations. We also know that there is a stronghold of Israeli intelligence on the ground in Iran. That has been for a very long time. They have been able to infiltrate government positions and be able to get information. That is how many of those attacks, even last year, were so successful. So it wouldn't be as though the people there would be flying blind and would have no concept of how to even take this over. There are intelligence assets that have a goal of seeing the fall of the regime. Now, I think we don't know how it will play out or how it could play out, because there are many different scenarios. But I think the intelligence that is on the ground there, and maybe even some that have infiltrated the military, would be running point in helping arm the citizenry. We know that this is a people that are brave enough to go unarmed to protest their regime, knowing full well that their regime will kill them. If they have backing and strength and know the direction forward, those people are brave enough to take their country back. I fully and firmly believe that, that they have the will to do it. The question is the how. And that is an unknown. That is not something that I can sit here and tell you exactly how it will or could play out. But there are ways and there are options. And it would come with the backing of U.S. intelligence, Israeli intelligence, and maybe even other nations that would not want to publicly say they're a part of it, that would want the helping the Iranian people reclaim their country from the Islamic Republic. So it's a great question, Linda. It is one that I wish I knew the answer to and could forecast exactly how it will play out. And it's not a guarantee. We know that the IRGC is very strong, very wealthy. They have friends that are bad actors all around the world. They control proxy forces that are still assisting them. This is not a thing that is over today, even over for the Iranian people for a very long time. But I do think that the Iranian people have that desire and have had it for a very long time and are courageous and will fight for their country and try to take it back. So once again, if you want to talk to me, we got one more segment left today, 1-800-684-3110. I've got four lines open. I want to see them all filled. Call me, 1-800-684-3110. But I also want to talk for a minute here about the 7 days of global impact that we are putting on this week at ACLJ. You'll see content on our website, in our emails. If you don't get our emails, go to aclj.org and sign up. A lot of ways you can get involved every single day. Just go there, aclj.org, sign up for the emails. But we have offices all around the world, Jerusalem, Africa, Pakistan, France, and at the in Strasbourg, France, where the European Court of Human Rights is. We go to the UN. We deliver oral interventions on behalf of those that feel like they have no voice, the persecuted, those that are killed, put on death row for their faith, falsely accused of blasphemy in places. And we're going to get into that this week as well, because it is important. It is vital that we fight for the religious freedom of everyone all across the world. And your impact is doubled when you donate at aclj.org/global. Join our 7 days of global impact today and double your impact.
We've witnessed monumental legal victories from defending the 14th Amendment and protecting our sacred American right to vote, the overturning of Roe versus Wade, and standing up for the religious liberty of our kids and seniors. But even with the many historic wins we've achieved, the battle is far from over. The attacks on our constitutionally protected rights persist. Countless unborn babies remain in jeopardy. And across the globe, innocent Christians are being targeted and killed across this country and around the world. This fight isn't just the ACLJ's. It's all of ours. It belongs to every American who wants to preserve the values and beliefs on which this nation was founded. None of the victories we've won would have been possible without the unwavering support of ACLJ members and ACLJ champions. It's been an honor to fight for you all these years. Join us in fighting for freedom. Have your donation doubled at aclj.org/freedom.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. If successful, these attacks will have a destructive impact on the future of our republic. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact, defending and upholding our values that this nation was founded on. From protecting the rights of kids to pray and share their faith,
the best thing you can do is take a stand. There's nothing too small. A kid who wants to start a Bible club is how the ACLJ got its first case to the U.S. Supreme Court. And today, we would take that case as long as we needed to.
Every victory makes a major impact, and it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom for you, your children, and generations to come. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.
Welcome back to Seculo, final segment of the broadcast. I'm going to get to your phone calls now. Fuad is calling on line three from Utah. Fuad, welcome to Seculo.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to comment, kind of going back to the last caller and your response about the Iranian people. I'm originally from Iran.
Yeah.
I've lived in U.S. 40 years, and I was there during revolution. Now, one thing that I respectfully don't agree with you is that the Iranian people are courageous, yes. However, in the last 47 years, they have given so much. My generation, half of them are dead, or half of them are out of the U.S. The next generation, they have systematically jailed and killed. People are tired. They don't have anything to give. I am not really a proponent of boots on the ground for the American forces.
Right.
However, it is something that I think it's going to be one that has to be definitely considered. I was listening to you regarding the intelligence and so forth. But during the revolution in Iran in 1979, there were factions that were armed. They could protect themselves. But now it doesn't exist. The people have lost their will, not the courage, but because this regime is so demonic and evil, it is hard to get people to give any more than they have in the last 47 years.
Fuad, I hear you, and thank you so much for your insight into this as well. And I think that is where I understand exactly what you're saying, that it is hard. And obviously, we have not lived under that oppression that the people of Iran have. When we talk about the boots on the ground, what I think most people think of it being any sort of soldier, Marine, Special Forces stepping into Iranian soil. I think when the administration talks about that, they mean a full-scale invasion, much like what we saw in Iraq. I don't have firsthand knowledge, but I believe that there are most certainly Special Forces type operations that are going on either by U.S. or Israeli Special Forces as we speak. They're just not talked about because that would not help operational security. But I don't think that is what the administration means when they say no boots on the ground. It's a different level than just regular army being sent in, the infantry, and marching on Tehran. But I do believe that some of the regional partners that do have large militias, when you piece those together, becomes armies. They could be used along with the backing of Central Intelligence Agency, the Mossad, the U.S. military intelligence agencies, to have a fighting force on the ground that could help assist in that. It's not a sure thing. And I think that the Iranians and the mullahs, those that are in control, are going to do everything they can to hold on to power. There is also a tipping point at some point where so many of the leadership are wiped out that there are people that are within those ranks that do not believe it is worth it anymore and could turn on the regime and the power structure that is there. That's also why I said we don't know how this ends. We will see where it goes, but also the United States' goal is to ensure that they don't have the capacity to strike their neighbors as well as the United States and U.S. assets. So that also can be achieved without necessarily toppling the regime. But we will see how it plays out. Let's go ahead and go to David on line one, calling from Texas. David, you're on Seculo.
How are you? My question is, what took us so long to go do this? I was United States Marine in 1980 and 19 to 1984, and I cannot believe that it took us this long to go do this.
David, thank you so much for your service, and I think many of us agree with that the historic threat that Iran has been to the United States, and you as a Marine, I'm sure you take it very personally what the Iranian regime has done to U.S. Marines. They have been killing Americans for decades, and men and women that serve our country bravely. What we've seen is the fallacy that you cannot take on this regime, and you cannot take out the leadership, and you cannot destroy their operational capacity. America is that strong and is that good. It just was the wrong leaders and the wrong military strategy, playing it too nicely, maybe being too politically correct in the way that it was conducted. But you're seeing that it was able to happen. But also, if you're going to put sanctions on a country, if you're going to make them the pariah of the world, and you don't have the strength to say, if you violate these, we're coming after you, we've placated them for far too long and enriched them in many ways through policies of some administrations. So I'm with you, David. I say, what took us so long? Because it can be done so well by our U.S. military. Let's go ahead and go to James calling from Virginia, who's an ACLJ champion. That means he gives to the ACLJ on a monthly basis. James, you're on Seculo.
Thanks. In a way, I think my comment has been addressed. I was going to say that I'd heard recently, either on TV or radio, what sounded like an informed Iranian talk about an existent resistance that's been present and planning for decades. But it sounded like Fawad countered that a little bit with saying that maybe that is no longer the case. This lady, it was a recent comment, and I didn't know if there was any knowledge about some kind of an organized resistance that's been sort of waiting in the wings for this opportunity.
James, I think that there are many factions. There are both also resistance groups that are in exile that I am certain also have communication with people within Iran. We know that the intelligence assets of both the U.S. and Israel are able to get information because there are people that resist the Islamic Republic. I think that it is almost guaranteed. But the how effective it will be is yet to be seen. I think that is also to some degree what Fuad was saying. But yes, there's a lot of unknowns with this. I'm going to get to Martin calling from North Carolina really quickly. Martin, you're on Seculo. Frank and Warren, call me back tomorrow. I'll get you on air, I promise. Martin, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I just really wanted to make the comment about with what you had talked about with the airport and everything, that should be a good talking point, not just for the right to the left, that we need to go ahead and do the right thing, quit people putting people's lives in danger, and get this bill passed to get the government funded where it needs to be.
Because Martin, I'm gonna add a little quick thing. I agree with you 100%. It's absurd that last week Democrats called the Republicans ridiculous for saying we need to fund the Department of Homeland Security. They said it was a ridiculous statement from Republicans that because of all that's going on, let's just please fund our Department of Homeland Security. I think they are the ones making ridiculous statements and doing ridiculously dangerous things by keeping the Department of Homeland Security defunded during this time. Folks, join us during our 7 days of global impact. Go to aclj.org/global. Have your impact doubled as all donations are matched. aclj.org/global.
Right now, your most sacred rights are under attack. Your right to free speech, your right to worship, your right to educate your children the way you choose. We're fighting in courtrooms across the country to have a lasting impact. And it's only possible because of the support of ACLJ members and champions. This is your opportunity to double your impact to defend freedom. Go to aclj.org/impact and have your tax-deductible donation doubled today.